It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Many care about knowing where their food comes from and how it was grown and processed, but many also struggle with how they should feel about their food choices, including the impact on their self-image and happiness and health, as may or may not be indicated by what their scales are telling them. But to talk about the latest thinking and controversies on these and other issues, I am so happy to welcome two of the world's leading experts on nutrition and real stars in the community of among dietitians, Manuel Villacorta and also Rebecca Scritchfield. Both of them have really impressive websites, and they're both very visible. They're looked up to, and they're being looked up to today on Farm to Table Talk. Manuel and Rebecca, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to start, Rebecca. When I go to your website, one of the things it says on your website is a quote from you. It says, it's not about your weight or your pant size. It's about how many calories you burn or how hard you work to avoid the delicious food you love. And it's about awareness. It's about self-compassion. It's about mindfulness. Mm-hmm. It's about joy. That's quite a statement. How long have you stood behind that banner?
Well, it is, so those are some of the things that I've learned after going through my own struggles in life with respect to being taught at a young age that if we cared about our health, then we should diet, you know, follow calorie plans. And I learned from the wise magazines that we know now as Fitness and Health and Cosmopolitan. But several years ago, when I was coming up and reading those magazines, I was not getting the accurate information about health and well-being. There was so much that was emphasized on, getting the right legs. So I'm short and I've got muscular legs, right? They were like never thin enough and I wasn't tall enough. And like many women, growing up, I kind of always struggled with accepting myself and my body as it is, seeing the things that I could do to care for myself as helpful and beneficial. And so the way that I ended up coming to creating Body Kindness had to do with realizing that things that I was doing for my own supposed health and wellness was actually not creating a better life. In many ways, was unhelpful to my well-being. And now I'm a mom to two young girls, and in my counseling practice, I have come to learn and realize that our culture sends the message that health is about our appearance, or that if we, you know, are at a higher weight, that there must be something wrong with our health or our bodies. And that is what drives a lot of people coming and sitting down on my sofa and saying, I got to do something about this weight. It's the problem is not in individuals, but there's a problem in our systems and structures that keep people focused on their weight and shape and appearance as a sign of health.
Mm. Boy, I tell you, you had so many things there that register to me, and I'm one of these people that love to eat, and there's quite a few of us, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. So I suffer from overnutrition probably because I get to go to many, many really good restaurants and places that are having great, great food. And so right off the bat, when you say it's not about your weight or your pant size, not even go into all the times where I've worried about the pant size, but it just seems like it keeps getting a little bigger all the time, and that's a challenge. But Manuel, now you have a little different perspective that you've expressed, and I don't know if you disagree with anything that Rebecca has, but on your website, you say health is not a diet plan, but it's a lifestyle. And you understand your body and your strengths and your limits, and you use this knowledge to make a change. And you say, stop dieting and start living. Do you still live by that banner?
Oh, yes, and I've been doing it for so many years, and I cannot agree more with Rebecca. I think just how we approach things is a little bit different. I do give people plans to follow, and they're not calorie plans per se, but I do help them with portions and food counting. So there's I think that's the difference with in our approaches. That I do give them a plan, and in my experience, I've been doing this for 18 years now with great success in my private practice in San Francisco, helping people lose weight. They come to me because they want weight loss, and this is where, you know, I'm going to talk to Rebecca about that, because when they come to me and they want weight loss, if I don't provide weight loss to begin with, most likely they're going to stop coming. And that just has happened before, even with clients that say didn't quite follow, you know, the plans. Now, in the process of giving them a plan and some sort of a guideline to follow, I am talking about mindful eating. I'm talking about loving food. I'm talking about improving the relationship with food, not demonizing food, and therefore my first book, Eating Free, comes, that's the foundation of what I do. I see hard to see even someone that hasn't even know how to read their cues, their feeding cues, their fullness cues, no sort of a plan that it can teach them to do that. So I like to hear from Rebecca how she does it when somebody comes to her and ask for weight loss. And of course, you know, a lot of times these people don't have good relationship with food. Guilt is there all the time. They haven't eaten potatoes in years. I mean, I literally seen people, I mean, I had a woman once. I'm giving her a meal plan. She reads potatoes in one of my videos that I made. And she's like, potatoes? I'm like, yeah, you can eat potatoes. And she starts crying in my office. I haven't eaten a potato in years. Well, potatoes are not the problem. So then I start educating them on portions and how much and how frequently. And I have come up with guidelines. I have come up with some sort of call it quote unquote rules to follow to get them where they need to be. Because I literally think they're lost. The other thing that I'm finding, too, with people is, you know, I just had a client 2 days ago, a guy who I'm telling him he's, you know, delaying meals, skipping meals, not eating, not even thinking about food. He goes, I don't want to obsess about food. But in a sense, he's not even eating. And when he eats, he is overeating because he's hungry, literally. And that's because he's not prioritizing his eating time. And so I'm telling him to put reminders to remember to eat. So there, in a sense, now I'm telling them what to do. And I think Rebecca's approach is like, don't give him any guidelines. And this is maybe I need to be instructed on how is that approach versus my approach.
So I want to start with by saying that I identify as a health at every size informed dietitian, and I'm happy to share more about what health at every size is as the principles, but essentially it is a social justice movement. It was created in the 70s, and dietitians were part of creating the original health at every size principles, and they've been part of health at every size from the beginning. And one big difference is that it's rooted in social justice for health justice and helping people pursue health in personally meaningful ways. And one key element is about weight inclusivity and accepting and respecting that there's an inherent diversity of body shapes and sizes, and that it's unhelpful to pathologize that it's certain weights, certain people's health must be suffering. And that's important to understand because that's also culturally constructed, right? Like, we all have a weight bias because thin is what is idealized, and people get more social power when they weigh less. People at higher weights are more likely to be discriminated against for jobs, promotions. Like, you really sacrifice a lot in our culture when you have a higher weight. And so it makes sense that clients come asking for weight loss because so much of it is wrapped up in our society. So I'm going to leave that part there, but it's also really important for me to say that in my experience, most registered dietitians who get curious, like Manuel has asked me about, I found most people to be health at every size unaware. And I was at that point too in 2007. And I can't say strongly enough how it makes sense that we're health at every size unaware and that it's okay to be there. Because again, back to that system and structures piece, we're trained in the weight normative model. We do our dietetic internships in the weight normative model. And this is, it aligns with our belief systems and our values. It's what we know. So to begin to even be open to exploring or understanding what that would even look like is a remarkable first step and an important first step. But I really want to say that because some of what I'm also sensing and hearing about in the field is that it's almost like looking at as an individual dietitian what you're doing is wrong and what you're doing is wrong. And I think it is a huge mistake to look at individual dietitians with like a type of blame, because again, it puts the focus on individuals rather than the systems and structures that got us to this point. So we're all going to learn and grow better and do more when we can engage in helpful conversations about, well, I'm curious about this. What is this? How do you do it? So I'm really grateful that Manuel is asking the question, and I'm going to share that next. But I couldn't share it without kind of framing it up in those in that order, so mm-hmm. we kind of understand that it makes so much sense that we would struggle with something like this. So then to turn that into like, well, what do I do in a counseling setting? So body kindness is my philosophy and approach that I created. So it's a book in my podcast. It is being researched currently right now on improving body image in postpartum women. It's grounded in positive psychology. It's grounded in motivational interviewing, and it's mindfulness based. And it emphasizes focusing on self-care habit changes where people determine what their values are and then take meaningful action in line with their values. And so it's rooted in a type of therapy called acceptance and commitment therapy. So I'm not a therapist, and I don't do therapy in the counseling sessions. But what's grounded in that philosophy are three core principles. Where you make choices from a place of love, right, which could mean sometime you're going to bed on time instead of staying up to watch TV because you have a morning workout that you decided that you wanted to do. And that might not feel like love when you turn the TV off, but you know that you'll appreciate that choice in the long run. So make choices from a place of love. Number two is connect to your body. It's all about enhancing the mind and body connection, whether it's through intuitive eating principles, whether it's feeling like that you're pushing it too hard in a workout and you need a break, or you're getting sick and you need permission to take a rest from the workout. It could be sensing that you're having a craving and that it's really coming from a place of interest in eating, not trying to escape or numb with food. And so you want to have permission to have that craving, like the potatoes that Manuel mentioned. And the third principle is care. It's about fully committing to taking care of yourself. And so those are principles and values that could work for anyone at any size. And that is a key component. So when I look at what I do, I fully expect someone's going to come and sit down and say, I got to do something about this weight. Even though on my website, I market it in terms of weight concerns. You know, people are going to have weight concerns because of the culture where we live in. I don't require that a person says, I don't ever want to diet again. I don't want to lose weight. Can you help me? That's not realistic. And I would be so unhelpful as a dietitian if I couldn't meet someone where they are. So what I do when they get there is I make space to hear their concerns about their weight, to hear body shame, to hear how they've been harmed by diet culture. I want to hear about, I ask what brings you to come and see me. I want to hear about all of it. I want to hear, you know, some of their desires, you know, are likely true and valid. Like, you know, I'm feeling this knee pain that was part of a recent weight gain. And, you know, I can't tell them what they're feeling in their body. And I also know that people at lower weights have knee pain and that there's a way to help people deal with knee pain, but with a weight inclusive and health focused approach. And again, it's just something that dietitians are not taught because it's not, we are not taught a weight inclusive model. We're taught the weight normative model. So as I make room for their concerns, eventually I bring a conversation about it's not about controlling your body and that you can have empathy for someone having a weight concern. I can't tell them how their body is going to respond. I can share information about, you know, that everyone is an individual, that genetics tends to play a factor, that how your weight changed during puberty and pregnancy might play a factor, your dieting history might play a factor, and that it's really about saying, you know what, I don't control your body. I can help you make meaningful choices, and I can help you think about workable solutions for some of these challenges you've brought in the room today. But you know something? I trust your body. I trust your body wants to work with you to help you feel good and make self-care choices and speak kindly to yourself. And so what I'm asking you to do is let's sit with these weight concerns. You can bring up weight concerns whenever you want. You know, I might ask them if they weigh themselves. And sometimes people weigh themselves once a day or multiple times a day, and that's really concerning. I do keep a scale in my office, a scale for blind weight. I don't recommend to weigh, but if I can let that be my concern, you know, and they could say, you know what, I can bring you my scale, but I want you watching this, Rebecca. There's lots of room for flexibility because they have to learn a whole new way of thinking, living, and being, and trusting. But a lot of people in the haze unaware space, like, they don't quite get that the issue is about building body trust and not about body control. So we can't, as clinicians, say how their body will or won't respond. We don't know. It's literally about the idea that we know that social justice and healthcare access is very important. We know that socioeconomic status impacts a person's health. Me, as someone who lives in D.C., a metropolitan area who does not participate in insurance, I know very well that most of the people I see are of a high socioeconomic status. So I know that where I'm helping them, I'm working with their personal resources that they have, the money they have for food, the time they have for movement, and I'm helping them create a better life in meaningful ways. I can't tell them they won't lose weight, but I can't tell them they will. I can't tell them either. I'm trying to help them enhance body trust and de-emphasize the value of weight, shape, and appearance that was put in there by culture that starts at the age of one. So from the age of one, we absorb these messages. Yeah. And so my 9-year-old version who was flipping through Fitness Magazine, recognizing that what I'm doing now to help a client, sees that 9-year-old that got that information. I just didn't get what I needed at 9. And when I dieted in my teens and, you know, I'd get congratulated, oh, you're so dedicated. And inside I was restricting, you know. And so it's like it can really mess with your mind. Yeah. And then just to even understand, there's a lot of people I love today who aren't thin. They're higher weight people. They're fat, you know. But somebody would call them fat as in like a pejorative way. Like, and I see that as an injustice.
Is it possible to be healthy and still be? I'm going to ask Manuel this question too, but Manuel, responding to some of the stage that she's been setting here, and this response. I've got really two questions, so maybe kind of a couple, and then Rebecca can jump in too. But kind of one is this broad philosophy. Whether or not you have taken any exception to any of this, so one of the things we're saying is that you can be healthy at any size. But the other thing I'd like you to kind of bridge into for us all to talk about is that why is this conversation getting so much more attention? I'm of the impression that in the recent convention, the FNCE convention, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, that there was a lot of talk about this. There's presentations, and it seems to be coming to the forefront of whether or not we need to be getting on scales and how much the weighing is a part of it. So I want to throw it back to you. I think anything you can jump in a little bit on some of the points in this philosophy that Rebecca's been describing and an approach of anything that either you take exception with or want a second, and then maybe if you could explain your impressions of why this is such a front-of-mind topic among dietitians today.
Well, no, I mean, I agree a lot with what Rebecca said. I mean, I do that throughout my sessions as well. We have different approaches, but we want the same end result. That is no doubt. I always tell my clients, if it were up to me, we just do one measurement, will be the waist measurement. As we know, visceral fat is inflammatory when it's in large sizes. And then I also ask for lab values. I'm looking at the lab values. Clearly I'm seeing prediabetes. Clearly I'm seeing hypertension. Clearly I'm seeing hyperlipidemia. So definitely there are conditions that need to be managed and with diet. So, when I'm looking at all these numbers, I mean, yes, probably weight loss is recommended. And I'm not setting unrealistic levels. We talk about probably losing 10% of their body weight to probably help them get better with their glucose levels, cholesterol, and et cetera. So I come up with plans that can help them with these without demonizing food, and also being mindful about the eating time and knowing to eat more fruits and vegetables, not cutting out any food groups completely. I mean, I think the approaches are the same, but there are moments where, as a dietitian, if you see someone already with these numbers that could lead to worsen their health, I mean, wouldn't you recommend weight loss, Rebecca?
So, so the first thing that I wanted to answer was, and I don't know if I misheard the statement, but it was the concept about you can be healthy at any size. And I just wanted to address it because it's a common misunderstanding of HAES, and so common that where the organization that owns the HAES trademark that created the principles, they have in their FAQs an answer to that question. It is not healthy at every size. It is health at every size. And it is, it's a social justice movement that is trying to help people pursue health in personally meaningful ways. And it also acknowledges that extreme high weights and extreme low weights, those are the weights that are correlated with an increased risk of death and with poor health outcomes. So there is no denial in that regard. So, and in fact, when we think healthy at any size, that's just, again, it's a cultural construct, right? We all have a weight bias because our culture is not weight inclusive. So we're going to hear that. We're going to see a higher weight person at the grocery store who might be buying stuff for a cake for their kid's birthday party. And we might have a judgmental thought about that. That's weight bias in action because culture says that we should make that judgment, And so, again, it's important to see and acknowledge that because we can talk about what we do in an individual setting and at the same time understanding that what HAES is about is about when people are seeking care, that they're getting respectful care. My talk at FENCI was on the neurobiology of dieting. And one of the things that I did was I talked about weight-inclusive approaches that dietitians can use. And the very first one was weight-inclusive medical nutrition therapy, okay? Because this is another huge myth. And in fact, I run an 8-month mentor program, and I just had a one-on-one with one of my dietitians who are in the program. It's open to all helping professionals to sign up and apply for it. But I had a dietitian before, and she works in Head Start. And she's like, I'm really trying to understand health and exercise because I feel like it could help me, but it also feels like it goes against what I know and I'm having a hard time. And she's like, how do I do nutrition and health at every size? She is asking the million-dollar question. It's because we're not trained. That's why we don't know.
Exactly.
But the way you would do weight-inclusive MNT, somebody comes to me, I got to do something about this weight. We look at the lab value. We see insulin resistance. We see diabetes is in the family or a diagnosis with diabetes. You start with self-compassion. It's okay. It's okay to be here right now. I have information about eating patterns for diabetes. Now that we've talked about your current pattern, you know, I'm seeing some things, you know, I'd love to talk to you about, like, for example, how movement helps your body use blood sugars. Okay, so you're here because you're interested in learning ways of eating that might help you manage your blood sugar numbers. Yes, okay. Well, I want to talk to you about your meal mix and balance. So you are still doing medical nutrition therapy. I, from my value standpoint, I do not recommend weight loss. And I do not recommend weight loss because the data is not there. And weight loss may be a side effect, but even the 10% number that Manuel mentioned, that's not likely to happen in the vast majority of people in the long term. Some benefits can be seen as low as 3%, some benefits in 5%. But the stigma, the shame and stigma people experience and internalize when they get to you, it is unhelpful to keep upholding that. And so that therein lies the problem. How do you give them the medical nutrition therapy, knowing that they desperately are hoping that that will help them lose weight because of our culture, but you help them relax around the importance of the number while you focus on what we know behaviorally is helpful. Well, food intake, exercise, stress management,
what I do in my practice. It's exactly what we do. Now, I have another question because I've seen some dietitians on Instagram, and maybe they don't quite understand the non-diet approach then, because when I see that, I'm getting confused, and hearing you is so refreshing. I think we're both doing the same thing. We just have different approaches. We're very compassionate. We're doing the whole thing. At the end, we want the same results. However, I've seen some dietitians, you know, claiming the non-diet approach and pretty much just telling everyone, eat whatever you want, whenever you want. It doesn't matter. To me, I mean, if I personally were to eat whatever I want, whenever I want, anytime I want, I'd be 300 pounds. So, as you know, appetite and hunger, there's so much confusion between the two. You may be physiologically hungry or maybe you're stress hungry. Who knows? But your appetite is telling you, my appetite always tells me I want pizza, you know, either because I am physiologically hungry or maybe I am emotionally hungry. Pizza is what we want. Mm-hmm. Pizza is what I want. If I were to please myself all the time with pizza, I'd probably be 300 pounds. So, and this is what they're telling everyone. It's just eat whatever you want, however you want it, however you feel, just please that feeling. I mean, to me, that is irresponsible.
Okay. So let me first answer. So there's two parts to the answer for this. Let me first answer this idea of, like, you and what you're thinking about your body. If I were to eat whatever I want, whenever I want, I would weigh 300 pounds. So how do you know that?
Because I've done that and I have gained weight. simple.
Okay, so has your body naturally gravitated to 300 pounds?
Well, if I would continue, who knows?
Okay. So
I tested that on me.
Yeah. So the thing of it is that if you look at the neuroscience pieces about a body's defended weight range and the set point theory, is that
yes.
your body has, it does have a range, but it's more like about 20
exactly.
pounds.
Exactly.
Right?
You're
so
right.
Your body
has
a range.
It has to do with leptin, it has to do with gravity. Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And so if you were, so you're a well-fed person, they're going to get senses to stop eating, and they're gonna respect that sense of fullness because they want to take care of themselves, right?
But
even
I also
if you did,
yeah.
What I'm saying is even if you had days and days and days of when you kept overshooting your energy needs for balance, bodies actually will speed up their metabolism to burn it off to try to maintain a defended weight range. And it will give you signals. If you're connecting to your body, it will give you signals that that's too much, right? So
yes.
I don't think, knowing you and your awesome abs, I don't think, come on, we got to get Manuel's abs in there. But I don't think that fear is true. Maybe you would gain some amount of weight, and it's your life. It's with your body, right? It's your
exactly.
body, your choice, how you want to take care of it. And you, it's,
exactly.
you have a workable way of eating that works for you. So,
yes.
you know, so that's the situation, right? Now, I just wanted to, I'm going to get to the Instagram thing, but it's worth addressing because it's actually not scientifically true that if someone works on healing their relationship to food and develops moral equivalency of food, so carrots are morally equivalent to carrot cake, right? They are not
yes.
going to, they may gain weight if they were weight suppressed, right? Some
exactly.
people lose
yeah.
weight. Like it's you just don't know what's going to happen when they re-regulate their eating pattern. So that is an important thing to be addressed. I hear you what you're talking about on Instagram. This is what's so important to understand, okay? And it's going to go back to social justice, okay? Right now, the dominant, powerful thing is diet culture. And it polices food. It says, praise the kale smoothies. Feel like a piece of crap if you ate the ice cream, okay? That is what is highly valued. That is what gets the power. That's what gets the credit. That's what gets the virtue. That's what gets the worthiness. So when
yeah.
a dietitian, right, posts on Instagram eating pizza, you know, eat this pizza, right? They're, you know, like, yes, they're having a diet. They're a dietitian as a credential.
Yeah,
and
but Rebecca, you know,
this,
I do that too. I do that too. I put my favorite ice cream that I like, and I say I don't bullshit
mm-hmm.
with my ice cream. Don't give me low sugar, low fat. I want the whole thing.
Thank
I
you.
I mean, you know,
right?
I mean, I do that too because I want to send a message. Hey, I eat this shit too, right? So
yeah.
Now, the thing is, but when they're saying, they're not just saying how I said it, look, I make homemade pizza today, I'm going to have two slices. They're saying, eat how many slices you like. Or,
mm-hmm.
like, there's no way to, they don't talk about portion control. And that,
mm-hmm.
that bothers me.
But let me jump in just for something that's a pretty non-scientific, but something that's still stuck in my mind when you guys are talking was back when the film Super Size Me, and, you know, the guy that went on a fast food diet for I don't know how long, and all the things that you were coming back looking pretty unhealthy as a result of it. And I'm sure there's much more scientific ways to look at it, but it was a pretty impressive film at the time that... It's fresh on my mind because we just drove 3,000 miles, and on the road we ate nothing but fast food that we could drive through and keep on going. And, you know, it was easy, and it's fairly inexpensive, and there's cost gets into it, too. I mean, people could go on a fast food diet and get dollar meals in all of the every place today. And if you had a family of four or five, and they might have weight issues, but it's so available to them and so less expensive than what they might think they could do eating nutritionally. You know,
So my first response about Supersize Me, have you heard that Morgan Spurlock actually faked it?
No,
I didn't. He lied throughout. He faked results. Yes. So that's not a great example because it's all been proven as bunk. And you can read the examples of it. Now, what you're bringing up about food access, now you're talking socioeconomic status, right? So you're actually talking health at every size. I'm not, you know, it's we got to look at how poverty impacts people's food access and availability. Mm-hmm. I'm a child who is a product of WIC. Thank goodness we had WIC because it helped us have access to healthy food. If you try talking to me about intuitive eating as a kid when there was just ramen and some in the cupboard and milk in the fridge, I would have laughed at you.
Yep.
But that's what health at every size does. It understands that there's a social justice element. And so, yes, we can look at the ways of changing systems and structures. How do we get access to healthier foods people can enjoy? But not only that, the privilege of having the time to prepare things. My mom worked two waitressing jobs to help feed her family. So she was not cooking for us. There was no time. So 100% health at every size is principle supports that. It's just that Manuel counsels in San Francisco and I counsel in D.C. I don't know if you take insurance, but I don't. So we don't see that population, but it doesn't mean that their needs aren't important. They're marginalized. Their needs are very important, and people who embrace health at every size understand that, even if it's not the center of their work.
Wow. Boy, that was a good answer. Manuel?
Manuel said something.
Okay.
So the Instagram thing, this was my one response I want to say. It would have been perfect time. It was going to be a well-timed punchline. But my question back was going to be, how do you, you know, like, should people be getting their dietitian counseling on Instagram, right? Because I feel you. I really want to validate for you, Manuel. I feel how that is bothersome. I really do. I think you should be able to say, I don't agree with what this dietitian posts on Instagram, and I think it might be harming people. I understand that statement 100%. I really do. I worry that people don't have access to dietitians to get the practical advice we can do one-on-one. I worry that people might listen to my podcast instead of paying me to see me. Like, no, you need to see me. Don't just listen to me on a podcast. You know, like, I worry about how people get their nutrition support. 100%, I am with you. All I want to raise is, it's just another confusing point on health at every size, is that, yes, I would hope people ask themselves with everything they're post, am I helping the vast majority of people? Right. A diet, you know, without having a specific example that we could both neutrally look at and share, it's really kind of complicated and hard. But let me just leave it as to say that maybe a person isn't fully thinking through that, and maybe they could learn and grow on that aspect. And maybe part of what they're doing when they're posting is they're trying to help with that cultural liberation of, we don't have to say, you know, avoid this, avoid this, avoid this. And I, again, without having an example, I can't read. Are they saying, eat whatever you want, whenever you want? And who gives a crap about fullness? I can't evaluate what I also would disagree with in that example.
Exactly.
But I just want to plant the seed of this idea that may be a dietitian who is really deeply intuitive eating trained. And again, intuitive eating is not our foundation for how we're trained. And they also may be haze informed. And so they may actually be posting to help fight the food police, but they're not just doing it the way that you would. And it's okay to be uncomfortable with it. And for some people, it could be harmful, and others, it could be helpful. And it's just, it's the problem with social media. We're not going to help everybody. Even when I wrote Body Kinds, I'm sure you thought this in writing your book, some pages are for some people and other pages are for other people. I tell people, rip out the pages of Body Kindness you don't like. Rip them up. I can't copy everything to everyone in a book, right?
Oh, no. I mean, even with the title of Flatbelly 365 for my last book, I got a few emails from all of my patients. You couldn't find it on title, couldn't you? I said I never said six-pack up diet. I mean, I'm just talking about reducing your waistline, you know. And then if you were to read the book, you understand what I'm talking about. It's all about health, the flat belly title was a hook so they can buy the book. But that's also, as you know, something that you need to work with the publishing house.
1,000%. And you know what it's also a good example of? From what I said in the beginning, it's probably the fifth time I'm repeating myself, why the real problem lies in the system and structures. Because you're a very smart dietitian, and you're a rare dietitian that should be very well respected. And the thing of it is that why is it that only so many people get to be published authors? Why is it so hard? Why is it so hard that you have to have a certain title, right? Like, I think if a publisher said, pick whatever title you wanted, right, maybe there would be a difference. I don't know. I can't speak for you. But the idea is that, again, the problem lies in the system and structures. The publisher is going to say what sells. That's why Body Kindness has such a long subtitle. They said, we need to get the word diet in somewhere. And I was like, how about never? So it's Body Kindness, transform your health. Transform your health from the inside out and never say diet again. So, but that word needed to get in there because of search. So what I would say
book,
is there's no...
My book has the word diet. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I don't for a second believe that Manuel is any sort of a problem. What I believe is that we have a whole problem with the systems and structures that are in place that keep actually the field of dietetics so exclusive. It's upper middle class, thin white women. We need more diversity in our field. We would do so much better to help people if our field represented America.
Well, and when you're and the thing that strikes me is when you're talking about diversity, you're not talking about, you know, just white people versus others. You're talking about the size and shapes of people with different needs, and that kind of diversity too, which is kind of hard to expect if you go to somebody for dietary advice and they appear to be quite heavy to you. Again, you're starting from a perspective that you think, well, I'm not sure, are they capable of giving me good advice on what I should be eating or what makes health?
And that confusion is a problem with the system and the structure. But there's also ways in which it's just now coming out, and I hope more people will share. But it's harder. There's a harder to practice as a higher weight dietitian, and it's harder to make it all the way through the program because of the weight stigma that they experience the entire time. And yes, that is an injustice. I think that our field would be better if we had much more diversity in age, race, gender, sexual orientation, ability, size, all of it. You know, like, when we're more inclusive, we all do better. And I think we'd all, you know, we would do, you know, like, diet culture is a big, big, big challenge that it might not even fully get to where it needs to go in our lifetime. You know, that's a thought that I have been holding with advice from others. It is a big, but it doesn't mean you don't try to make a difference in meaningful ways that you can. And so for me, and in my experience, it was learning about health at every size, reading the principles, looking at research, and trying to figure out for me, well, how do I help people if I'm not going to diet, and how do I help people who have concerns? I had to learn things like the word weight concerns and learn things that eventually became body kindness and see that it was workable, but also understand that people will still come saying, I got to do something about this weight because culture says it, and it's not my job to take that concern away from them. It's my job to sit with that pain and difficulty while I help them do the best they can within their financial means and the time means that they have, take care of themselves.
Yeah.
It's just that I can't predict what will happen to their bodies. And that's what I do in a counseling setting, to the best of my abilities. And then when I go on my podcast and I want to bring in somebody who knows about weight stigma research, I do, you know, I invest money in podcasting so that I can put a free resource out there so people can learn about how weight stigma is harmful to health. And hopefully that will help change the culture eventually, you know?
I tell you what, you guys have hit on so many things, and we've just barely scratched the surface. There's a lot of things I want to get into. Maybe we can have another conversation someday, because we have dietary guidelines going to be recreated. We've not talked about making choices in food that consider sustainability. You know, we're talking about the individuals, and again, there's other things to come back to in the future. But for now, we need to wrap up, and I want to go to each of you.
Yeah.
And for Manuel, to summarize, if you're talking to somebody that an individual that's not necessarily a dietitian, what's the philosophy and the approach that you want to leave with someone?
Sure. The idea of cutting out food groups completely, you know, all foods can fit in the diet. And again, respecting and loving food. Food is healthy eating. To me, is not just about eating nutritious food. So when I talk to people about healthy eating, that means also the time that you take to eat, the time you shop, the time you cook, and that relationship with food that we need to build. And trust me, people walk into my office, they have none of that with them. So that's like a huge shocker for them when I'm telling them that the time to prepare and plan and also time to eat and be mindful about what you're eating and your portions is part of healthy eating. It's not just about eating the kale.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And my website, you can go to manuelvillacorta.com.
Good. And Rebecca, for a final word of your counsel.
Sure. I would say something like, your lived experience is real and your pain is valid, regardless of the messages you've received throughout life, that you are worthy just for being born. And what I want to do is I want to help you create a better life in whatever body you have today and tomorrow and in your future.
Well, that's perfect.
And for website, bodykindnessbooks.com.
Well, I tell you what, this has been a really great conversation. And I appreciate having you both take this time to visit with each other, with us, and share it here on Farm to Table Talk. My guests are Manuel Villacorta and Rebecca Scritchfield. Thank you for being on Farm to Table Talk.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.